Hello, I'm Dominic Fazioli. This is number 0479, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0479. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Bruce Nagy, author of The Clean Energy Age, as he talks about electric cars. The fear of running out of electricity is quickly dissipating.
There are a lot of reasons not to worry about that anymore. First of all, the vehicles are getting very long range. The average person only travels about 50 to 60 miles to work and back in a day. And these things on a single charge will go 200 miles. Some of them go 300 miles, the Teslas. Also, those numbers are changing literally as we speak because batteries keep getting better, charging technology keeps getting better.
We remember Nevada brothel owner Dennis Hoff, who recently passed away. Dennis was a businessman and a proud American. Even when talking about a Secret Service scandal, he wanted people to buy American.
I am really disturbed about this. You know, you're threatening our national security by doing this, and the bigger issue is in this terrible economy, I want Americans to buy American. And these Secret Service guys should have stopped by the Bunny Ranch on the way to Columbia and took care of their business, and then we wouldn't have all this big scandal right now.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He has the latest example of racial profiling in New York City.
So this lady goes into a bodega to pick up some things. And the next thing she knows, some 9-year-old black kid is stealing her ass. So she starts yelling her head off, calls the cops. The cops show up. Kid is bewildered and terrified. His mother is crazy because this is not what her son would normally do. So the cops fish out the surveillance film that was in the surveillance camera. And it turns out all that happened actually is the kid just walked by her and his knapsack hit her can.
And we have lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0479, was Dominic Fazioli, a news reporter and video journalist at Journal Metro in Montreal. Thank you very much, Dominic, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Some people can get pretty territorial about their food. So it appeared in Colleton County, South Carolina, on September 29th, when 19-year-old Ryan Dean Langdale warned his 17-year-old cousin not to eat his salt and vinegar potato chips. "Do not touch my chips, or I will shoot you," Langdale told his cousin. Langdale then went into another room, retrieved a rifle, and the rifle went off, according to the sheriff's document. Langdale summoned help, but told police his cousin had accidentally shot himself while cleaning the rifle. Officers didn't think that story held up. The pathway of the bullet through the victim's chest was impossible if he had mistakenly shot himself, said Sheriff's Major J.W. Chapman. Sure enough, when the victim was questioned after undergoing surgery, he told officers the savory snacks were the center of the dispute. Langdale surrendered on October 10th and was charged with, among other crimes, attempted murder. Okay, full disclosure. I hate salt and vinegar potato chips, so I can't see a reason why anyone would get shot over them. Oh, I could shoot someone if they tried to force me to eat them. But seriously, if this is the kind of violence that Ryan displays over food items, then he's going to be in for a world of hurt in the prison mess hall. Yeah. An alert, or nosy passerby, called police on October 10th after seeing staff through the window of a NatWest bank in Birmingham, England, hiding and cowering under their desks. Officers arrived at the bank in hopes of catching a robber red-handed, but instead were told the workers were participating in a team-building game of hide-and-seek. West Midlands Police Chief Inspector Dave Keane tweeted that, although the incident was a misunderstanding, the citizen made the right call. Wow, playing hide-and-seek as an adult at work. Ready or not, here comes management! This must be one of those touchy-feely things that corporations do, you know, like trust falls. And trust me, that's stupid. What other fun games can we play at the bank? Oh, I know. How about a game of Russian roulette, but instead of using guns, you use pouches filled with money. One of the pouches is an exploding dye pack. Yes, then hilarity ensues. Yeah. And finally, in the section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 41-year-old Yuri Zhukov, a factory worker in Donetsk, Russia, was found kneeling in a field in early October with a knife handle sticking out of the top of his head. Zhukov was conscious, and when questioned by police, he revealed that he stuck the 8-inch blade in himself. He was having trouble breathing through his nose, he explained, and hoped to make another hole he could breathe through. Yeah. But the knife became stuck and he couldn't remove it. Doctors at the local hospital were afraid to touch the knife for fear of killing Zhukov or causing brain damage. It was horrific, a hospital spokesperson told local media. X-rays showed the blade exactly between the two hemispheres of the brain. Specialists were called and Zhukov survived the surgery without apparent brain damage, although surgeons are concerned about infection. Okay, there are two mentions in this story about a concern for brain damage. If you ask me, that's a ship that sailed when you consider this guy voluntarily stuck a knife into his head because he was having trouble breathing and he wanted another breathing outlet. I can't imagine this incident making him any dumber or in a bizarro world making him any brighter. When all is said and done, I hope the doctors will at least prescribe antihistamines or decongestants for this guy. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? What are some of the myths that surround the idea of buying and using an electric car? That's the question we put to Bruce Nagy. He's the author of The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change. Bruce joins us on the line right now from Toronto. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the program with us. There are a lot of myths that people have about buying electric cars. I must confess that I probably have some of them too. So let's get to some of them right off the bat. And the one I want to get to, since we both live in Canada, is one that I often hear, that electric cars don't hold up to our cold climates. True or false?
Well, to some extent it is true, but not that they fail or anything. It's just that the battery doesn't last as long. So you have... The charge in the battery does not last as long. So in the very cold weather, you're going to have to charge it a little more. But apart from that, not any real problems. In fact, maintenance on an electric car is a lot less than a gas car, so it's much less likely to fail in the winter in general.
So one of the things people always complain about when it comes to electric cars is their cost as opposed to the cost of owning just your basic gasoline-powered vehicle when going in. But over the life of a vehicle, and let's say for argument's sake someone keeps their cars, say, 7 years.
Right.
Would you spend more money in an electric car over those 7 years than you would in a gas-powered vehicle?
For sure you'll come out ahead with an electric car, and actually in North America, people keep their cars an average of 11 years. However, even at the 7-year mark, think of it this way. You will save usually with average distances driven in a car over its lifetime, you should save about $20,000 in gas. So That's because you will reduce your fuel bill by 75 or 80%. So you're going to pay a little more for electricity, of course, if you're charging at home or wherever you're charging. But you are going to save 75 or 80%, which is meaningful, especially to people who buy on time because they pay $200 or $300 a month to own the car and then another $200 or $300 to put gas in it.
Now, you talked about the charging aspect, and again, I have an idea of what a car costs me when I put gasoline in it on a regular basis, even though gasoline right. keeps going up. I have no idea what it costs to charge a car. What is that normally for an average-sized vehicle, a sedan, let's say?
Well, to be honest, I don't know what it costs at the charging station, but I've been told that it's, you know, a little higher than your house. And as I explained, the fuel is 25%. The cost of electricity is about 25% of what you would spend on gas.
What are some of the other myths that people have when it comes to electric cars?
Well, I guess range. People are very worried about, will the car die on me? And there are a lot of reasons not to worry about that anymore. First of all, the vehicles are getting very long range. The average person only travels about 50 to 60 miles to work and back in a day. And these things on a single charge will go 200 miles. Some of them go 300 miles, the Teslas. Also, those numbers are changing literally as we speak. Because batteries keep getting better, charging technology keeps getting better. One thing to realize is that most of the charging is done at home, so the charging network fears are, to some extent, not that important. However, the charging network is running ahead of the need right at the moment. There are thousands of chargers, and you can find them all on several websites. And lots of people doing sort of pilot tests of cross-country travel to prove that the range is not going to be a problem. That's one of the myths. I can go on.
Well, I'm just wondering, because let's talk about charging right now. What about the ports one uses to charge? I'd hate to think that cars are similar to basically, you know, your iPhone, that every time a new one comes out, the charger is different than the one before, and no two are compatible. If I'm taking my car, an electric car, on a long distance, am I going to be concerned with, I might find a charging system, but somehow it's not compatible with the vehicle I own?
I'm not going to lie to you. They're working a lot of that out right now, but the solutions are coming quickly. So there are some manufacturers who have adapters and so on to solve that precise problem. There are others who don't. And there are also some manufacturers like Tesla who have built a great network of their own that's strictly for their own vehicles. And there are others who are using sort of a universal system. So that is a little bit of a concern, but it's like anything else. You've got to do some planning, and it's the same as planning your route with charging, and it's the same as planning to fill up your gas tank if you're driving a gas car.
Yeah, but the difference is, you know that there's, unless you're driving through the desert, you know you're going to find a gas station, no matter where you are.
Yeah, that may be true, but if you're just winging it, you have a better chance in a gas car. But if you're a planner of any kind, all the tools are available for you online.
I can't speak for instance, here in Canada, the Trans-Canada Highway, just as I can't speak for, in the United States, the intercontinental highways that they have across their country. But as we have in this country, on major auto routes, we have places where you can fill up your car with gas strategically placed along the route. Is that happening now with electric cars as well? Those same places, can you charge your car along major highways?
Yes, there are thousands, literally thousands of charging stations being added each year to the North American highways, including Canada. I know my knowledge is a little better for Ontario. They are putting in about 200 stations, just under one contract that I'm aware of, and that's all on the 400 series of highways.
I take it you drive an electric car?
I drive a hybrid, actually.
Well, I was going.
I think it's a practical consideration. You know, you may not want to buy a new car if you have a perfectly functioning existing car. My hybrid gets very good mileage.
I was going to ask that question. There are people who might want to dip their feet into the waters as opposed to plunging in whole hog. And one of the ways of doing that is getting a car that is electric but also has a gas option to it. Would you recommend those for people who are skittish, especially considering we're at a moment where not everything is completely up to speed everywhere as to what people might need with an electric vehicle?
Well, the key phrase you used was for people who are skittish. So obviously, yes, if you're skittish, you should do what you think you need to do. However, on a philosophical level, you know, as an environmentalist, I would recommend to myself and to others to go pure electric and reduce your carbon footprint. But also, there's some practical reasons also to go fully electric. One of them is, and it was explained to me by fleet managers that I interviewed for different articles, that having a gas engine and an electric engine just creates a lot of as much maintenance as having a gas car. Now, the difference in maintenance is about 50%, according to these fleet managers, and that's probably because an electric vehicle has 20 or 30 moving parts, and an internal combustion engine has several thousand. So I think it's obvious what has the more potential for greater problems and more maintenance costs. And I think that applies to passenger cars, whether you're a fleet or not. And so I think that's one argument. And I also think that to get the real savings, my hybrid saves me about half the gas. And now I can save half again if I go all the way to electric. So I think, you know, those are some strong arguments. And I am actually considering turning mine in. It's not completely done, but it's old, so, you know.
you talk about lessening your carbon footprint. Now, we here in Canada are blessed with the fact that a lot of our power comes from hydroelectricity, which is a relatively clean way of getting power. But in parts of the United States, they still depend a lot on, for instance, coal. So how much of your carbon footprint are you decreasing if you're using more electricity and your electricity comes from coal?
You are not, and that's why it's important to vote for the right people in whatever jurisdiction you are in and try to get people in place who are going to work with the utilities, work with the energy management boards, and get rid of coal. And actually, it's happening in a big way. And the main reason that it's happening is not ideological. The main reason it's happening is economical. You say hydro in Canada, there's also plenty of solar and there's also plenty of wind all across North America. Hydro is especially good for you folks over in Quebec because you've got the James Bay and so on, and it's cheap there. But solar and wind now have dropped in cost considerably, and there's something called a PPA, Power Purchase Agreement, is the document the contract that is signed between a power station and a utility, and those things are selling for far less than coal. Wind and solar power purchase agreements are selling for far less than coal and gas, and I shouldn't say far less, a little less than gas, and far, far less than nuclear. So people are not even aware of this change, but investors certainly are. And now across the world, I guess there's $300 billion or $400 billion of new power plant capacity being added every year, and about 97% of it is wind and solar now. So the other thing too, if you're an investor talking on the subject of the energy business, it is scheduled to double. It is projected to double in the next dozen years. The size of the energy business as we move towards 9 billion people will double. And if you already know that 97% of the new capacity will be wind and solar, and you know there will be a huge amount that's switched from gas and coal, then you know that's a good investment.
Absolutely. Interesting stuff indeed. Again, the book is The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change. Bruce, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. And if the folks want to get a pre-Christmas discount, they should go to bfnaggy.com, B-F-N-A-G-Y, because you'll find a little promo code that you can use to go on the Roman and Littlefield, roman.com site, and you can save 30% as long as you order from there before Christmas.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Nagy, author of The Clean Energy Age, A Guide to Beating Climate Change. As you heard, there is a discount available to order his book. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0479, and you'll find links to Bruce's site to take advantage of that discount. You'll also find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. On the air on stations in Singapore, New Zealand, and America, and streaming through your computer. This is The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll remember the late brothel owner Dennis Hoff. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a show that is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and also heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Now, let's get back to the stuff. On October the 12th, an Air India Express pilot guided a Boeing 737 up, up and away from the international airport in Tamil Nadu, India. But not enough up and away. As the plane took off shortly after midnight, it hit the top of a 5-foot-tall perimeter wall and destroyed a small landing guide tower. The Washington Post reported that, despite the audible collision, the pilot told the airport director the plane systems were functioning normally and he was continuing toward Dubai across the Indian Ocean. But we found some parts of the plane, like an antenna, on the ground, the director said. Finally, about 2 hours into the flight, ground control convinced the pilot to return to India, where the plane landed in Mumbai. Indeed, there was a huge gash in the plane's underbelly, and mesh fencing was wrapped around the landing gear. All 130 passengers arrived unharmed and were booked on other flights, and the pilot and co-pilot have been grounded pending a review. You know, it's never comforting when your airline pilot flies the plane with the same blasé attitude that your glaucoma-ridden grandmother drives. Nana, why is there a shopping cart embedded in your grill? Yeah. Police in Panama City Beach, Florida, responded to a man who appeared to be pleasuring himself at a condo complex while looking at women and girls on the property. Officers told him to leave and not return, but when investigators discovered there was a series of similar incidents at the property, as shown by security cameras, a warrant was issued for his arrest. By that time, 44-year-old Billy Driggers had already returned to his home in Alabama. He was arrested at his place of employment, pending extradition to Florida. Driggers' employer has suspended him without pay. Driggers works for the city of Level Plains. His job there? Police chief. Yeah. You know, when people say that you should lighten up and let loose when you're on vacation, I don't think they mean you should let everything loose. It'll be interesting to see if the evidence stands up in court, if you know what I mean. Anyway, let's get to our next segment here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Between doing this show, the Stuff File program, and doing my previous radio show, there is one guest who, over a period of 20 years, I've had on over 20 times. That would be Nevada brothel owner Dennis Hoff. The last two times I had him on the show was back in April, when he announced he was running as a Republican for the Nevada State Assembly District 36, and again in June when he won the nomination. Well, Dennis died last week, just hours after a combination 72nd birthday party and campaign rally. He died at the Love Ranch, one of his legal Nevada brothels. Another of his brothels was the Moonlight Bunny Ranch, which was made famous by the HBO show Cat House. Dennis was a no-holds-barred kind of guy. When we talked on the air, you never knew what you were going to get. Each year on my old radio show, I did an annual New Year's Eve party. During that show, which sometimes ran as long as 8 hours straight, I would do a lot of call-outs to various locations around the world. One of those annual calls was to Dennis to find out who was starting the year off with a bang, so to speak. He was always irreverent, and he was always a master self-promoter. If there was a topic in the news that dealt with sex in any way, I knew I would get an email from Dennis with his take on the subject, and that was yet another reason to have him on the show. For instance, back in 2012, there was a scandal involving the Secret Service in the United States. Some of the agents were literally caught with their pants down after word came out that they visited a brothel while on a trip to Colombia in advance of President Obama's arrival. Dennis had his say about that.
I am really disturbed about this. You know, you're threatening our national security by doing this. And the bigger issue is in this terrible economy, I want Americans to buy American. And these Secret Service guys should have stopped by the Bunny Ranch on the way to Colombia and took care of their business, and then we wouldn't have all this big scandal right now.
Now, the other side of that coin, too, is because, of course, in Colombia, like in Carson City, Nevada, prostitution is legal. But there's also the other question of just because it's legal, there are some things that people shouldn't be doing. And some people say the Secret Service, in this case, it's one of them.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And trying to be a good American, what I've decided to do is to send out a crack blonde forward team to any country our president goes and have those girls at our people's disposal in case they need them.
Wow, I'm just trying to figure out how they get the visas to enter some of those countries.
Well, we'll get it done, and I'll send the blonde entourage, you know, six killer blondes that I love, that I know like to have a good time, and if the Secret Service guys needs help, then we'll help them as to be good Americans.
Now, I know one of the things that makes you successful is you're not exactly one to kiss and tell, but I will ask this question in a general kind of view, and that is, have you ever known of Secret Service to frequent at any time in the past your establishment?
Yes. Everybody comes there, all walks of life. And the reason they come there is because it's legal and it's safe. You're not going to get a disease. Nobody's calling the police on you, and nobody's calling your wife. And if these Secret Service guys would have just been smart and bought American, we wouldn't be talking about this.
So not only do you think it's a dumb thing that they did, it's almost as if you were saying it's somewhat unpatriotic and bad for the American economy.
Absolutely. Why outsource jobs that that healthy American girls can do, and better probably?
As you can tell, even as a brothel owner, way back then, Dennis had a very GOP conservative way of thinking about business and commerce. That was in April of 2012. Dennis and I chatted again in March of 2014. The reason for this conversation was twofold. One was because a couple hooked up for life after only being together for 4 hours at the brothel, and the other story was a chance encounter with a former U.S. president. Well, I want to talk to you about that couple I was mentioning earlier in the introduction. There's a longtime customer picked one of the bunnies out of a lineup recently at the Bunny Ranch, and they were committed to marriage within 4 hours. What's the story?
4 hours. This is unbelievable. A guy's been coming in here 15 years. His name's Rich, and he lives here in northern Nevada, and his fantasy has always been to marry a bunny. And so whenever he comes in here, that's what he talks about. That when he goes into the room to party with them and pays them, that's what he talks about. And so we always thought it was just a fantasy that that's what he wanted to do. So now Rich comes in and hooks up with Holly Brooks, a girl that worked for us, and a porn girl. And next thing I know, they're coming and say, he wants to marry me, and I think I want to do it. Nobody's ever asked me to marry them. I said, well, why don't you guys go on a honeymoon first and charge him whatever you're going to charge him. And so they went on a four-hour honeymoon, and they found out they were compatible. And so now they're going to start planning the wedding. So we just went along with it thinking, this is never going to happen. This is all just a fantasy. And all of a sudden, Valentine's Day, they went out and got married.
Wow. Now, as you say, this is a customer who's been coming to you for 15 years. So even though he'd been a regular customer at the Bunny Ranch, he and Holly had never met before?
Never met before. He came in here and he met her and liked what he saw and used his typical I want to get married routine. And she decided she wanted to do that. And so they're now, she packed up her stuff. They're happily ever after in Reno. And if any of your listeners would like to get involved in the pool, it's a $10 pool just to pick the date that she'll be back to the ranch.
She'll be back. So you don't think this is going to last? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's built on a fantasy. And, I mean, they knew each other for just a short period of time. I don't know how it's going to last too long. Seems kind of crazy to me.
Okay. Now, you say, again, 15 years he's been going there. So is it quite possible that he had asked previous bunnies to marry him, but this is the first one who's actually said yes?
Every girl. He's asked everyone. And that was his M.O. He liked to ask all the girls, and they would play about it and go back and forth. Well, let me think about it, and we'll just date for a while. And they went back and forth like that until now. She just said yes. And they went out and bought a ring and scheduled it and got married.
There was another story involving, well, a former U.S. president. This is a story that made the New York Daily News back on Sunday, March the 2nd. There's a picture of Bill Clinton and two of your ladies of the evening. How did that come about?
Well, I got invited to an event, the United for Humanity event in Los Angeles. And this is an event where a lot of celebrities were going to get awards. It was a fundraiser dinner, and I was invited as a celebrity guest, and actually helped them sell tickets. The tickets were $4,000 apiece, so we put it on the BunnyRanch.com website, a banner on there, and sent out a newsletter to all of our loyal customers and said, please come to the event. So I need to pick a couple girls to go. So I knew Barbie Girl, who's on the HBO Cat House series, and a centerfold that works for us. She's a huge Bill Clinton fan. Young girl, but a rock star type. She thinks he's a rock star. And there was another girl at the Love Ranch, who now has moved to the Bunny Ranch, named Ava. Now, Ava Adora. Now, not only was she a Bill Clinton fan, but she had also been involved in some humanitarian causes in Nepal, Beijing, and someplace in Malaysia and Indonesia. She was going and working with people in regards to safe sex, malaria, things like that, teaching the country how to deal with these things.
Dennis, it could be said that everyone who works for you is in the humanitarian business, really.
Well, our girls are humanitarians. Yes. Willow's sitting here shaking her head. Like, yes, I am. Yes, you are, darling. And so we went. And we went on the red carpet. We got our credentials. We were sent by security, sent to the red carpet, spent 20 minutes, maybe 5,000 photographs. Every news agency was there. Went inside. The girls started having cocktails. Bill Clinton comes in with the security, with the Secret Service. Now, these girls had no interest in Robert De Niro. Sean Penn, Jane Fonda, Demi Moore, Demi Lovato, Alicia Keys, Selena Gomez, and the list is a mile long. But they wanted to meet Bill Clinton. I said, come on, let's go down there. So we walked down to the front of the stage where he was, and he stopped for a minute to say hello to a couple people. And the, and Barbie Girl came up and said, Mr. President, I'm Barbie Girl from the HBO show, Cat House, and I'm a Bunny Ranch girl, and I'm your biggest fan. Can I get a picture? And he says, come on, girls. And so the girls went up there, and he was generous enough to take that wonderful photo. And then Ava said, thank you, Mr. President. And he said, it's always a pleasure taking pictures with pretty girls. And that was kind of the extent of it. And I had Ron Jeremy with me also, and Ron shook his hand. I stayed in the back because I like Clinton, and I just didn't want to cause him any problems having a picture taken with me. So anyway, the picture went worldwide now. It's viral. Everybody's talking about it. You know, everybody from TMZ to the London Mail, you name it, they're on it. And Tokyo papers, and you know, Bill and the hookers, and so it's gone viral.
I'm sure Hillary must be pleased.
No, she must be not pleased at all. He's going to cut her off again. She's going to cut him off. They tell him, go to the Bunny Ranch, Bill. You want some hips, lips, and fingertips, get on out to the Bunny Ranch.
See, there's another example of why there was never a dull moment when you're talking to Dennis Hoff. During that conversation, he also put on the phone a naked bunny named Willow who was in the room with him. That's Dennis. In 2015, we chatted with him a couple of times. One of those conversations was when he was looking to hire quality control testers for his brothel. Again, he had company in the room, a young lady named Chrissy Summers, who joined into the conversation.
It's something we've been doing for 23 years, but we've just ran out of good candidates, so now we're going public with it. We just never told anybody about it, you know. It's a secret shopper program, basically, and every restaurant has it. Most hotels have it, but we always kept it to ourselves, but we ran out of good candidates, so now we're out shopping.
So what is the what are the qualifications required to be an official tester at the Moonlight Bunny Ranch?
Well, the qualifications, you obviously have to be experienced. You need to know several different positions, and I'm not just talking about missionary and girl on top and all the typical positions that everyone knows about, but the different types of positions. Somebody that's fun, somebody that's respectful. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be like the most attractive person in the world, just average Joe is fine.
Now, it's interesting that you say someone has to be experienced because, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Dennis. I'm sure there are a lot of people who, when they go to a brothel, it's a first-time experience, not just going to a brothel, but having sex.
Absolutely. It happens every day.
So I would assume that one of the things your employees would have to do and have to know is how to, shall we say, gently inform and educate someone for the first time. So wouldn't that be something you would want to have tested too? I mean, how someone treats a first-timer per se?
It's one of the top things on Chrissy's list is are they compassionate? Are they knowledgeable? We want that to be a beautiful, wonderful experience. And it's a lot of business. And what we're seeing now is people in their 40s coming in, doctors, people that are very successful, a lot of these computer guys, and they're in their mid-30s to mid-40s and still virgins. And so, yes, it's extremely extraordinary. And what we'll ask our tester to do is to act like he's a virgin just to see how that's dealt with.
Mm-hmm. Make sure the girls are respectful. They'll be testing the girls like based on their room, the cleanliness of the room, what type of music they're listening to, if the atmosphere is sexy, and based on all their overall performance and their appearance and mostly their personality.
So now that the word is out there that you're looking for testers, how far afield are your applicants coming from?
Well, we were in New York doing television shows. We did, you know, we're doing Nancy Grace. We did Maury. A good Day New York, and you interviewed, what, six or eight people in New York City, right?
Mm-hmm. We interviewed a lot, and then we were just in San Francisco, and we had a few interviews there as well.
So they were lining up in the hotel. In fact, the hotel manager, who knows, we called the room and said, Dennis, what's going on? You've got like five or six guys down here all saying they're going to your room.
I know. They had to get security involved, and then Dennis told them what was going on.
He thought maybe one of the girls was working out of the room or something.
But you also have more than one location, correct?
Seven. And
seven.
So we'll have them travel around Nevada, go to different places. Are you busy this weekend? I got room for one person.
I'm kind of booked up. I'm sorry. Okay. So, but what does it pay again?
$1,000 a week, U.S. And we give you a bar tab in case you want to drink, and because we're testing the bartenders at the same time as to quality and performance. And you know, we give you transportation money.
Mm-hmm.
It's the world's greatest job, Peter. It's absolutely the world's greatest job.
Yep, they didn't call Dennis the P.T. Barnum of booty for nothing. He was also the author of the best-selling book, The Art of the Pimp. You know, I could do an entire show talking about Dennis, but I won't. We don't have time to talk about back in 2015 when NBA star Lamar Odom OD'd in one of his establishments, or our 2017 chat when he went on a rant about Vladimir Putin when Putin said Russian hookers were better than American ones, or when he talked about using Bitcoin as one of his payment methods. And as I mentioned earlier, our chats about his own political aspirations. Dennis was always ahead of the curve and a master of PR. Dennis Hoff died celebrating his 72nd birthday. That's probably how he wanted to go. You know, every time he was on with us, he always said that if I ever visited him in Nevada, I'd get the broadcaster discount. Well, there's another missed opportunity in my life. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Here's some sobering news from the world of medicine. A practicing cardiologist who also teaches at one of the top medical schools in the country says that the type of medicine you receive is too often being dictated by fear rather than facts. The reason for this is the amount of time American physicians now spend defending themselves from lawsuits rather than tending to patients. Compare physicians in America with physicians in Europe, for example. According to a study by one of the leading survey research companies in the United States, 99% of American physicians in high-risk specialties will face a lawsuit at least once in their careers. In Europe, that number is only 20%. Let's be fair, there's no evidence that doctors in the U.S. are any worse than doctors in Europe. It's our legal system that allows this. So, doctors order more tests to cover themselves in case they're sued, and the cost of healthcare we all pay skyrockets. It doesn't need to be this way. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, with us from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. Live from the streets of New York, which are a little bit nippy, which is the first time I've said that to you in months.
Yes, the winter is coming, as the saying goes. On television shows on HBO, winter is coming, and you know, with winter coming, even though it's getting colder out there, there are still people who make a living on the streets beside yourself, but they do it on bicycles. Now, I understand that on any given day there's as many as 50,000 bicycle delivery workers throughout the city of New York.
That's right.
Wow.
We got 13,000 yellow cabs, 65,000 Uber-type cars, limousines, buses. We got everything except trolley cars. And, of course, the angle with the bicycles is that that's not new to New York, but what is new to New York is that they're going to allow people to motorize them, have some kind of, I guess, a rechargeable electric battery or maybe a small gas engine. That's going to be pure chaos.
So the idea is that they'll have these so-called e-bikes. To make their life a little easier, they wouldn't have to pedal as much. Now, why is it going to make life more arduous, in your estimation?
Because right now the vehicles, the number of vehicles that I've just cited to you that are on the streets of New York are unbelievable. Never in my entire lifetime of driving a taxi for 300 years have I seen as many vehicles that are on the streets now. I mean, think about it. 65,000 Uber types, 13,000 yellow cab types, and I mean, I can go on and on and on. The city, it's like crushing. And what's also very bad about it, it's just about impossible to get an emergency vehicle through Midtown Manhattan. So, folks, here's a travel advisory. If you're thinking of having a heart attack on the streets of New York, don't.
Or ride a bike.
Yeah, but that, if you, then you become what I call an organ donor.
Now, to be honest, you are driving on a daily basis through the streets of New York, so you see what goes on a regular basis. Is part of the problem you see it as being that sometimes the delivery workers, especially the courier ones, I find this to be in most cities, they aren't necessarily following the rules of the road and are weaving in and out of traffic and up and down on the sidewalk and all those kinds of things. Is that the same thing that's happening in New York?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, the motorcycle riders do that too. In New York City, you can only stay in the lane. It doesn't make any difference if you're two wheels or four wheels or 13 wheels. You got to stay in this lane. This business of going in between lanes is a favorite trick of motorcycle people. And now I fear the bicycle, electrified ones, are going to start to do it. It's a horrendous situation. I mean, I hate to sound like an old codger who's complaining about it, but it's never been as bad in all my years of driving a cab as it is right now. And I would beg, plead, implore everybody, don't even consider driving into New York City. And the other thing is, and this, I guess, is a sign of age, is I think people are nastier today than they ever have been. I mean, I'm talking about the drivers now, the cutting off and all that. Let me tell you something. I can certainly hold my own on the field of combat. And many times when I have a passenger in the vehicle with me, I say, you know, if you weren't in the car with me and I could be assured that my wife wouldn't find out about it, the guy that just did what he did to me, I'd put him up on the sidewalk.
Well, let me ask you this, because one of the things that I get concerned about, and you being a taxi driver, you've got a four-door vehicle, people getting out on both sides. Do you ever worry somebody getting out of the cab behind you and opening their door into a cyclist going by?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a question of being so alert. And I just find when I go to my therapist later, only kidding, he'll find out that most of my tiredness is not from the physical act of driving, but from the mental, doing the combat of it. And it just, you know, it's like, let me tell you something. When I pull the vehicle into the garage at the end of the day, the end of the shift, I sit there for just a moment and I go, whew, made it again.
Wow. Well, one of the things, speaking of made it again, one of the stories that caught my eye in New York City is they're filming the movie The Joker. The new movie stars Joaquin Phoenix, who will play the DC Comics villain. But they were filming a scene, or several scenes, during the weekend in a subway car. And extras on the set of the upcoming Joker movie were locked in a city subway car for more than 3 hours during the filming in a Brooklyn train station. And they were even forced to relieve themselves onto the tracks. Now, I just keep thinking myself, the whole third rail situation, and I don't know if that's a good idea, but
well, I guess if you got to go, you got to go, but you're right in your feeling about that, because, I mean, that's the cardinal rule. Don't ever get on the tracks. Don't ever get out of the train. I don't know the circumstances of why that happened, but yes, they were in very, very severe danger, and the heads could roll. That's almost as dangerous as being a Saudi Arabian in Turkey.
Wow. Well, you know, as far as the story goes, apparently the extras were filming a scene in an unnamed subway station and denied their break after 2 hours of work. And apparently things got so bad that the desperate actors banged on the subway doors, pleading to be let out to no avail. And they eventually did their business, as I mentioned, on the tracks in between the cars. A complaint has been lodged with the Screen Actors Guild, which will continue to monitor the situation. And the outlet has been reported to Warner Brothers, and they are also investigating the incident. So there you go.
If I were hired to be an extra in a subway car in the subway system,
I would do something very simple and very easy. I would wear a Depends.
See,
no, I mean that seriously.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it as a joke. I mean, there haven't been occasions in my life, I don't, just to reveal my physical disease, but which I don't have. The fact of the matter is that any time I've ever had that kind of a situation, I unabashedly would stick on a Depends. So there you are, revealed right here on the Peter Anthony Holder Show, that on occasion, the Gabby Cabby has worn a Depends.
You heard it here first, folks. On to other things. There's another story in the news, the fact that yet another building in New York City is having Trump's name removed from the entrance. This one is Trump Place. So there you go. Your thoughts?
Nah, it's stupid. It's stupid. I mean, the guy built the buildings, and that was the name of it. And when people moved in, and you can give the argument that they're giving that it's going to diminish the value because so many people hate him, but you could turn around and say you could increase the value because his name is on it. It's absolutely stupid. It'd waste the money for the tenants to go out and hire somebody to do it, get the lawyer to do it. And you know what it reminds me of? There was a time in the United States when in every black neighborhood, the names of the streets were changed. So, for instance, 125th Street became Martin Luther King Boulevard. Lenox Avenue became Malcolm X Avenue. The way New York City got around that is we kept both names. Isn't that clever?
Yep.
So if you go to Lenox Avenue and you look at the street poles, it says Lenox Avenue, it says Malcolm X Boulevard. So that's how we handled it. What they should have done with Trump's building is done the same thing. Leave the name Trump up there and put the real address of the building, which I think is 240 West End Avenue.
Okay, good idea. And finally, one thing I want to get to, another story, and people can find some of these stories on your website at Gabby.com in your True Tales for the Week. What's the story about the surveillance footage from inside a Brooklyn bodega, which led to a police call by a woman?
If it didn't have a serious undercoding to it, so to speak, I think it's the funniest story of the year. It really is. So this lady goes into a bodega, a grocery, a deli, to pick up some things. And the next thing she knows, some 9-year-old black kid is feeling her ass. So she starts yelling her head off, calls the cops. The cops show up. Kid is bewildered and terrified. His mother is crazy because this is not what her son would normally do. So the cops fish out the surveillance film that was in the surveillance camera, and it turns out all that happened actually is the kid just walked by her and his knapsack hit her can. That's what it was. So of course the lady had to do, you know, terrible apologies and this, that, and the other thing. Everybody kissed and made up. I don't know whether the mommy is going to sue or something now, but as I say, it struck my silly bone. Because in this day of political correctness, it's great when something like that happens.
But even, let's say for argument's sake, it actually did happen. Do you really?
It did happen.
What I mean is,
that is with his hand.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Do you really need to call the police on a 9-year-old boy?
Well, you know, I think with this Me Too and everything else that's going on. By the way, just to get off topic a little bit, or maybe it's on topic, I've noticed a tremendous backlash to women about this thing with men and women and being careful. And I've heard many men say, boy, I'm not being alone with a woman unless there's somebody else there. And even for a brief moment, I said, gee, maybe I better never take a single lady into the cab.
Well, I was,
so I think all of what's been going on has had an effect on our society.
I was just about to ask you, I mean, you to use a term that you have said on the air many, many times, the idea of mufky fufky. I mean, sometimes there are people who get a little amorous in the back of a taxi cab. Is that still happening, or is that something that's gone away?
No, it's a very rare thing, at least for me. It only happened once in my entire career that somebody did the deed in the back of a cab. And it was no big deal as far as I was concerned. But I will tell you quite honestly, after they got out of the cab, I looked in the back to see if it was dirty in any way, and there was nothing on the seats. That's the practicality of that.
And I think that's a note we should end on right there. You know, normally we we talk about a celebrity sighting, but you know, you're very blasé, you're very jaded. You see celebrities each and every day. It's no big deal to you. So it doesn't make sense to have a celebrity sighting anymore, because first of all, you're always seeing them and you're a celebrity yourself.
Well, thank you very much. But the main reason is that now everybody's wearing hats, and they'll be wearing scarves, and they're wearing coats, and I could be standing next to Harrison Ford and I wouldn't know it.
Well, in the meantime, people can find out more information about everything Gabby Cabby, from the tours you offer to the items that you talk about on your website. They can go to gabby.com. They can also send you an email. Speaking of tours, if they want tours of the city of New York, they can send you an email to peter@gabby.com. Peter, I thank you once again for being on the program with us.
And thank you for that, Pete. Everybody, bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We have time for one more item, and you know what that is, boys and girls. Yes, it's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Springfield, Missouri man took to Facebook in July to proudly demonstrate how to remove an ankle monitor. 33-year-old Dustin W. Burns had pleaded guilty earlier this year to violating a restraining order and was placed on probation. Authorities believe it is Burns using a butter knife and a screwdriver in the video, saying, "This is how you take an ankle bracelet off without breaking the circuit." The narrator advises against damaging the electronic equipment so as to avoid thousands of dollars in fines. Subsequent Facebook posts reference trips to Utah, Idaho, and Oregon. And a video shows a man resembling Burns walking through a large marijuana farm with the caption, "Dream come true." He has been in the Greene County Jail since August 28th now, and was charged in early October with tampering with electronic monitoring equipment, which is a felony. Now, why? Oh, why would you go to the trouble of removing your ankle monitor, thereby giving you free access to travel anywhere you want, only to brag about it in a how-to video on Facebook for all the world to see? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0479. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0479. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.